The next case is 07347, Polaris Amphitheater Concerts versus Delaware County Board of Revision. Mr. Slags. May I begin?
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, my name is Todd Slags, and I represent the appellant Polaris Amphitheater Concerts, Inc. in this case. This is a 2003 real property tax valuation appeal that comes to this court from the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals. Sorry about that. The county auditor valued the land, which is essentially the issue in this appeal, at a fair market value of $13,799,100. At the Board of Tax Appeals level, the appellant and the Appalachian Board of Education both submitted appraisal evidence and testimony as to the valuation of the land. The appellant's appraiser testified to a value of $7,200,000 for the land, and the Appalachian Board of Education's appraiser testified to a value of $8,600,000 for the land, and the Board of Tax Appeals, in its decision in order, adopted the county auditor's valuation of the land, the $13,799,100.
The auditor did not testify at the hearing?
That's correct, Your Honor. And there really is no evidence of how that $13 million figure was determined. There is no evidence in the record card, no calculations, really nothing to guide the Board of Tax Appeals or this court in terms of how that determination was made. And that's essentially why we're here. Because as the court has recognized, if there is no evidence in the record to support a determination of value by the Board of Tax Appeals in the record, it's unlawful. And we believe that the evidence in this case shows that the Board of Tax Appeals determination of the land value was unlawful.
If we accept your position, and assuming we decide the issue of whether you can split out the valuations as well, what do we do? Do we remand it for them to look at the two appraisals and determine which to accept or something in between, or do we decide here?
Your Honor, I would, and we've requested that you reverse and remand it to the Board of Tax Appeals with instructions to determine the value based upon the appraisal evidence in the record. That's what the court did in the Dublin Sawmill Properties case that we cited. That was a case that I brought before the court 15 years ago. The facts are very similar. The underlying valuation evidence was a little different, but basically the facts in the Dublin Sawmill Properties case was that there were sales of the individual parcels of the property at issue that were around $170,000 an acre. The Board of Education's appraiser had valued those same parcels around $180,000 an acre, and the Board of Tax Appeals determination was about $310,000 an acre. So there wasn't any evidence, as in this case, to support the Board of Tax Appeals determination of the land value. So in that case, this court reversed and remanded the case to the Board of Tax Appeals and instructed them to value the land based upon the evidence in the record. And we would request that in this case as well.
The overall valuation in this case, though, was it $20 million?
It's a little over $20 million, Your Honor. $20
million. Contesting the land portion.
That's correct.
How did the overall valuation comport with the rest of the evidence at that hearing?
The overall valuation of the property at a little over $20 million was consistent with the overall valuation of the appraisal evidence that was submitted by the Appalachian, the Board of Education, but it deviated from the individual component value of their appraiser. With respect to the appellant's evidence, The Board of Tax Appeals' overall valuation, as I've already mentioned, was higher than our land value. And then if you look at our historic cost information in the record, in the supplement on page 229 are what it actually cost us to build the property in 1994. It was about $9,600,000. We added some ancillary buildings for about $240,000. And those items would have to be depreciated because the Board of Education's appraiser even applied a depreciation factor to the different components. And those components were depreciated anywhere from 7 to 60%. Now, if you took the mean, it's about 33% between 7 and 60%. If you apply that to our historic costs, that's $9.6 million figure and the $239 million of additional ancillary improvements, you come out at about $6.6 million, which is very close to the auditor's assessment of the improvements at $6.9 million. There's other evidence, Your Honor, that supports that same figure. If you look at the construction draw information that's in pages 339 to 341 in the supplement, the value there is about $11.5 million if you pull out the land value. And again, applying that same 33% depreciation factor, you come to about 7.2. So looking at those two different actual cost documents, you're a little bit below the auditor on one, you're a little bit higher than the auditor, but we believe that the evidence in the record supports the county auditor's valuation of the improvements, which is one of the reasons why we didn't bring that issue to this court.
Has there been other precedent addressing only one portion of an overall appraisal that this court has considered?
Yes, Your Honor. As I just mentioned, the Dublin Sawmill Properties case, and then most recently, the Dayton-Montgomery Port Authority case, which we cite in our brief, that was kind of the flip side of this case because the issue in that case was the improvement value, not the land value. And we cite the court's discussion in that case, which essentially supports our position in this case on the issue that the appellees raised, specifically that we can challenge either the land value or the building value. We're not limited to contesting just the overall valuation of the property. And as I've just enumerated, we really feel that our evidence supports the valuation of not only the land in this case that we're requesting, but also the building valuation. And we feel that the evidence shows that the Board of Tax Appeals' decision on the land value was unreasonable and unlawful.
Now, if the auditor came in at $20 million, but 13 of that was land and roughly six of that was improvement, and you're in agreement with that six, if we accept your proposition that you can separate out the values and just contest the land, we send it back, even if they accept the highest value of eight that the school board put forward. Eight plus the six still gets you short of the 20. On remand, are they free to look at as well the evaluation by the school board on the real property and accept that? That makes up the difference in the 20?
No, Your Honor. There was no appeal of the building valuation issue, and I did note that in our brief, is that neither of the appellees, neither the county auditor, the county board of revision, or the Board of Education filed an appeal of the land valuation. So the only issue before this court is the land value.
So your argument would be that the auditor's value of the roughly $6 million plus for improvements is a concluded done issue?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the only thing that can go back, in your opinion, is the land value, and whatever the land value ends up being determined is added to what the auditor already has decided as the improvements to give you the new figure?
Yes, Your Honor. And as I, in my discussion with Judge O'Donnell, we feel that the cost information in the record coupled with the Board of Education's appraiser's testimony regarding depreciation supports the county auditor's assessment of the issue.
But it's immaterial if
right.
it wasn't appealed, in your opinion.
I agree, Your Honor. I would like to touch on a point that you mentioned at the start of the argument, Your Honor, and I think it relates to the appellee's argument under 5715.19A1D, where they argue that that section of the statute precludes us from contesting one of the individual elements, either the land or the building value. We've already talked about the case law, the Dublin Sawmill Properties case and the Date Montgomery case, but I think as I took the court in our briefs through the constitutional provisions and the statutory provisions and the Ohio Administrative Code provisions that apply in this area, that their reading of that particular section of the code is inconsistent with everything else in the Constitution and the statute, specifically Article 12, Section 2, that provides that land and improvements shall be valued by uniform rule according to value.
But the statute does say that the determination of the total value of any parcel that appears on the tax list is what must be the subject of a contestant's complaint against a Board of Revision ruling.
That's correct, Your Honor. And my position is
the best argument that they will have is that the statute says you can't do what you're asking us to do.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I have made two suggestions in the brief. One is
you think that statute is unconstitutional.
I have made that argument in my brief, Your Honor, and I think alternatively, if you read that particular section of the code in conjunction with the other statutes and constitutional provisions, that it could not be read to preclude contesting the valuation of one of the individual elements. So you really have your choice in this case. You can either strike that provision of the code or you can read it consistent with the rest of the statutes. With Article 12, Section 2, requiring that we value land for tax purposes by looking at real estate, by looking at the land and improvements, I think that that particular provision argues against their interpretation of the statute. Then if you move into the revised code under 5713.03, the auditor, in carrying out that constitutional directive, is again required to value each tract, lot, or parcel and the building structures and improvements, and that value is supposed to be a separate part of the total value. Then, when we get into the Ohio Administrative Code rules that are promulgated by the Tax Commissioner under Revised Code 5715.01, again, land and building structures, fixtures, and improvements are separately treated. So I think the constitutional and statutory scheme that exists in Ohio really counsels against the appellee's interpretation of 5715.19A1D.
Counsel, if we agree with you and send this back, one minor matter is, I believe you're focusing on four parcels and the other appraiser had five, and it is there anything that we need to determine with respect to that, or is that not an issue that would have to be unwound if we agreed with you?
We did brief that issue, Your Honor, and there is a 8-acre piece of land that was purchased in 2001 by the appellant, and it's an 8-acre piece of buffer land. It's shown on the plat maps and the topo maps that are in the record, and that land was not something that we contested the valuation on. We purchased it in 2001 for $100,000. And the auditor has that 8-acre piece on for $125,000. Now, we did criticize the appellee's appraiser for valuing that land as if it was commercial land available for development. And in our briefs, we argued for a separation of the valuation of that particular 8-acre piece using their evidence.
So that is something we're going to have to address.
Yeah, and we've basically briefed that issue, Your Honor, and there are calculations in the brief that if you separate out Mr. Kuhn, and I took him through this analysis on cross-examination, if we separate out his value for that 8-acre piece, it's $760,000, which would really adjust his total valuation for the commercial land to $7,840,000, and then we would argue that the evidence in the record would require that the valuation of that 8-acre piece remain at the auditor's assessment.
Okay. So you would, and that is based on the fact that there's a fresh arm's length transaction, so you work off of that. Is that your theory? And his theory, I assume, was it's assembled to the rest of your parcels, and it wasn't so valuable for the last guy that owned it, but once you hook it up with the rest of yours,
well, there's really
its value goes up exponentially.
Yeah, there's two issues, Your Honor. One is that site is zoned different from the rest of the site.
Right.
The 83 some acres that are not, that don't include that piece, are zone LC4 and CPD, which is a limited commercial planned development designation. The evidence in the record, and we included this in the supplement for that 8-acre parcel, is that it is residential. And so there are really two issues. One, can you value that piece using commercial land sales? And we've argued that to do that violates the Porter case. And then, as you point out, number two, we've got a recent arm's length sale. That should really serve as the basis for the assessment, looking at, for one source of authority, the Dublin Sawmill case.
But if we decide that you can separate out the challenges and send back the land value for reassessment by the board, do we even need to reach that? Because that's all part of the land assessment, and that could be part of what we remand back for them to decide as the valuation of the whole.
That's correct, Your Honor. I believe that we briefed that issue before the Board of Tax Appeals, and so I think if the case were sent back on remand, they'd be able to address that. I see my time is up.
Thank you, Mr.
Sleggs.
Mr. Gillis.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court, Mark Gillis on behalf of the Board of Education of the Olentangy Local School District. 5715.19 is clear. It states that a complaint can only be filed against the total valuation of a parcel that appears on the tax list. That statute was changed in 1982 from the language of any valuation that appears on the tax list. Appellant has argued that if only the total valuation of the property can be challenged and not the individual components, that a property owner will somehow be deprived of its right to challenge the value of its property.
Counsel, by doing what the appellant is doing, challenging the value of one of the components, maybe indirectly, but he is challenging the total value then.
Well, there is nothing that would indicate that if the land is overvalued by the auditor, that the improvements are not likewise undervalued. And in this particular case, the appraisal presented by the school board indicated that the total valuation of the property was $21 million. Now, within that appraisal,
But you said the auditor came up with that. Did you?
No, the auditor's original value was $20,734,000. The Board of Education's appraisal, which only opined to a total value of
right.
$21 million,
right.
which was in support of the auditor's value. In that appraisal, Mr. Kuhn did do a cost approach and indicated the acquisition cost of the undeveloped land at $8.6 million. Mr. Kuhn did not opine to a value of the property as it existed, which is developed land. It was only the acquisition cost of raw, undeveloped land. The appellee, the property owner's appraisal, valued the property for something that doesn't exist. He was instructed to value this property as if it were vacant, which it is not.
But isn't that what the improvement valuation does, is enhance the value of the purchase, what the raw land would be worth? Then you add the valuation of the improvements, and that's how you get your total.
That's when we get into the allocation of the improvements. You can have improvements that are to the land, such as utilities, sewer and water lines. Those are not considered improvement value that is separate. You can look at it, compare it from an undeveloped residential lot to a platted lot that now has city sewer and water. There is no building improvement on that parcel. It is valued as land only. But the value is higher than it is in its undeveloped state. Consider a vacant, 100-acre vacant field that is covered in brush and scrub. It has a value. But then when it's cleared for farming, it has a higher value now because it has been, the land itself has been improved for its use. In this particular case, you originally had roughly 90 acres of vacant ground, and tons of earth was moved to develop the property for an amphitheater, not unlike a golf course in the way they construct them now, where they move tons and tons of earth to give you the contours of the golf course that you want that enhances the value of the land. But it is included in the cost figures in development. However, that is value that goes to the land, not upon the land. The building of the amphitheater and so forth are improvements upon the land, and that is what is designated as an improvement or a building improvement value on the tax list.
So your argument basically is that, A, the wording of the statute doesn't allow a piecemeal attack, but
that's
secondly,
correct.
It makes no sense because you can't, in the abstract, consider one without the other, that the two are inherently tied together to give the value of the whole property for tax purposes.
Yes, and the BTA has held in a previous case, which we cited in our brief on page 23, the New Brander case, that properties are generally valued as a whole and allocated the value between land and building.
Well, counsel, I'm looking at the notice of appeal.
Mm-hmm.
It says the appellant, Polaris Amphitheater, by and through its counsel, hereby gives notice of appeal to the Supreme Court from a decision of the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals rendered on the 26th of January, 2007, a copy of which is attached and is incorporated herein. So they appealed the whole decision, and then they tell you that the assignment of error, what they're complaining about, is how they valued the land.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, aren't you on notice? They've brought the whole case here. Their complaint is they got it wrong on the land. There wasn't any evidence to support that. And that puts you on notice, doesn't it, that you need a cross appeal?
Ordinarily that would be the case, and that was the case in the Dayton Montgomery Port Authority case, where the improvement value was appealed to this court. But the land
component
was not.
They didn't appeal
not.
The land value. They appealed the whole case here.
They appealed the whole case.
And they said in their notice, what we're unhappy with is how they valued the land. So you knew what they wanted to talk about, and that their position was going to be the auditor got it right on the buildings. So doesn't that put the Board of Education on notice? Hey, if we want to protect the other part of it, we need a cross appeal.
We could not have cross appealed because we were not injured by the decision. At all times, the Board of Education sought to retain the auditor's value and on land and improvements, but namely for the total. And that's exactly what happened throughout this case. And this court in the Dayton Montgomery Port Authority case said, appeals may be prosecuted only to correct errors injuriously affecting the appellant. And that was citing Ohio contract carriers.
So how does one then get to us if a part of the BTA's decision in the view of the taxpayer or in the view of the Board of Education is just out of whack? How does one get that to us for us to determine?
You appeal the entire decision.
That's what
And
they
it's
did.
Always the entire decision. In fact, the only decision that the BTA made was on the total valuation of the property.
So it's here.
And it's here. And so that is the whole valuation, the entire valuation is before the court.
And we can't just, and we can't look at the land and say, you got that wrong and send it back?
You can send it back, but you have to send it back with instructions for them to redetermine the value of the total property, because that is their duty. As a matter of fact, in, I believe it's the Dublin Sawmill case.
So the difference in your points of view is the taxpayer wants the improvements issue foreclosed when it goes back, mm-hmm. and if we agree that they got it wrong on the land value, then the improvements should be open.
That's our first argument, that yes, if we're going to entertain an error with regard to only a portion of the total property is always at issue. Because then you find this court, and then on remand, the BTA in the paradox that they can order a reduction in the land value, but because the total value is no longer in question, they can't lower the total value.
So you're saying that they should have a second bite at valuing the improvements when they're devaluing or lessening the value of the land?
They're not getting a second bite. The decision of the BTA set the value of the total, and then they recited the values that were listed on the property record cards.
They had
that's
the
all.
The components, the how they got to that, they did the math.
Yes.
Okay, so one of the figures is contested, but you're saying that they could then take it all back, redo the math, and say, okay, maybe you're right, and we'll lower the value of the component, the property, but we're still going to then increase the value of the improvements to get the same $21 million figure.
They're reallocating the value, yes.
But they have already the evidence in front of them to do that because you presented that evidence.
That's correct. The Board of Education's appraisal.
So it's not anybody's not submitting new evidence. It's just we're saying you can't blindly adhere to the auditor because it didn't support its figures of $13 million. But you have the ability, if we're going to remand it, because it was an appeal of the whole, we're going to remand it to take a second look at the evidence because we felt that they came down wrong on a piece of the evidence. Am I correct?
Well, I would first address the statement that because the auditor didn't defend his value, that they can't rely upon it. What the BTA found was that Mr. Lorms's, the Appley's appraiser's evidence on the land component only, valuing it as something that didn't exist, was not competent and probative evidence of the value of the land as it stood. In the BTA's decision, it indicated that Mr. Kuhn's appraisal of the whole at $21 million was supportive of the auditor's value, but they also made another statement that his $8.6 million value was for raw land, and therefore it doesn't apply to the value of the land as it stands on January 1st, 2003 in this property. It was nothing more than a statement of what the cost to acquire the land would be. You then have all of the development costs, a portion of which are attributable to the increase in the value of the land, and that's why I refer to it as a reallocation of the total value, which has been completely supported by the Board of Education's appraisal.
Is the reason that they're trying to get the land value so much lower because of the new tax law changes on personal property?
I can't say. Originally, the case was brought, and they were attempting to have the improvements reclassified from real property to personal property. And that claim was rejected, and they have abandoned that claim at this point before this court. I do not know why they're trying to have the land reallocated. It seems to me they're cherry-picking the values. They did not file an appeal based upon the BTA's decision of the total value of $20,734,000. They've only picked the land value, thereby essentially trying to have the improvements that were done to the land, not upon the land, escape taxation because they weren't allocated in the right to the right component. And that is why the statute was changed in the first place. Before you could file an original complaint at the Board of Revision on any value that was on the tax list, there is a land value, an improvement value, and a total value. The statute was changed to say you can only file it against the total value. Now, how you go about doing that is the party's choice. But you have to prove both components here. You can't come in and say, my land is overvalued. I don't want to talk about the building here because it may be substantially undervalued. I only want you to look at this portion.
You obviously have to, at least by implication, argue that the statute controlling the appeal to the Board of Review and the BTA that is the nature of the appeal, also applies to an appeal to the Supreme Court from the Board of Tax Appeals. Not necessarily true, is it?
Well, with regard to what is at issue before the Board of Revision and the Board of Tax Appeals, is the case before this court. Now, there are other issues, constitutional issues and so forth, that those tribunals cannot determine and this court can. But the only issue, and therefore the only issue decided, and therefore the only issue that can be appealed, is the total valuation of the property.
But the statute, I don't have it right before me, but the statute or authorizing an appeal to the Supreme Court mm-hmm. indicates, as Justice Pfeiffer's questions brought out, I thought, that you appeal a decision of the BTA, but you have to advise the court of the grounds for your appeal, which seems to me is exactly what the appellant did here.
That's correct. And if you look at assignment of error number 3, the statement that he quotes in there, that the evidence provided, and this was a statement by the BTA in its ruling, that the evidence provided by the Board of Education is supportive of the original values assigned to the subject property, not to the land and building, to the subject property, the whole thing, by the auditor and affirmed by the Delaware County Board of Revision. Appellant then adds to the land, but that statement wasn't being applied to an individual component. That was not the statement by the BTA, was a finding for the total valuation of the property. This finding was immediately preceded by the finding that, quote, Polaris has not met its burden of demonstrating that the subject property's fair market value, of what the property's fair market value as of the tax lien date, the whole property. That's the only decision they made. They kept the value of the entire property at $20,734,000. Then they recited what the individual values were. If that's the only decision that was made, it's the only decision that can be appealed here. He's attributing statements from the Board of Tax Appeals and findings from the Board of Tax Appeals that they attributed to the entire value and is trying to cherry pick only the land value in this case.
You need to sum up.
So in summary, additionally, we also don't believe that their land value appraisal evidence, as the Board of Tax Appeals indicated, was competent probative evidence of value because it simply valued something that does not exist, which is a vacant land. He also changed the highest and best use of the property or the use of the property from an operating amphitheater to a potential office building development site.
Isn't that what's going to happen?
We're talking about a tax lien date of 5 years ago. It was an operating amphitheater for several years. That may be what it happens now and in the future, but we all know that the markets change over time, and as things have developed up there, the use may change to that. But changing the use 5 years prior is not necessary. Is not what was there January 1st of 2003, which is what is supposed to be valued. I see my time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Gillis. Mr. Sleggs, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. As the courts recognized, if the appellees had a problem with the building value, in this case, they could have filed a cross appeal. That issue is not before the court. We believe
if they didn't have any problem with it because they accepted the appraiser, the auditor's value, what would they have a cross appealed on?
Their appraiser opined that the building improvements were worth $12,400,000.
That all came after the appeal was filed. All that evidence was gathered after the appeal was filed. At the time of the appeal, they were happy with the appraisal. They had nothing to complain about. What would they have cross-appealed on?
At the time of this, that evidence was submitted at the Board of Tax Appeals prior to our filing the appeal to this court. So they were aware that what their appraiser's opinion was for
the value. Happy with the decision. They didn't have anything to complain about with the decision.
If they could have done the same, had taken the same position that we did, we felt our evidence supported the auditor's building value. We did not appeal that issue. We felt the land value was high. They could have cross-appealed and said that the building value is too low. I believe that the 5717.04 would have allowed them to do that. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Sleggs. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.